Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by a guest that has not been on in a while. It's Yusei Koshal. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, man? I'm doing great. The weather's obviously a lot better here in Chicago. Spring's around the corner, so yeah, I'm feeling good. How's Utah treating you?
It's going good. I just started a new job recently, kind of getting my feet on the ground there. Been kind of taking a little bit of a podcast break for the past 2 weeks, but I'm glad to get an episode back up this weekend. I'm really excited to kind of get to it. This is obviously being recorded on April 1st, but it'll drop the 6th or the 7th, and hopefully people enjoy it. But yeah, I've been really busy here. It's just been a lot with school and the new job and working two jobs and keeping up with school. It's been a lot, but I'm getting used to it.
Yeah, awesome. Sounds good. Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. I've got a month and a half left in the school year, so waiting for summer to roll around. But first, I'm waiting for the NFL draft.
Yeah, absolutely. Draft's coming up soon. We're definitely going to get a little bit into the draft, I think, today. We're going to go around the NFC and look at where teams kind of stand heading into the draft as far as the positions they've addressed and what they've done in the offseason. And hopefully we'll get into a little bit of draft talk as well on this episode, just because I haven't done a lot of that yet, and I'm pretty open. I don't know a ton about the draft, but I know that you are a big draft guy, so I'm excited to kind of get to that. But before we do that, let's get to some of the news, which is, man, there's been just a ton of it over the past few days, it seems, you know? Like, it just seems like every single day there's a ton of new news that drops. This is a terrible segue. There's been some news that's dropped, and we need to get into it. So I'll start with Rob Gronkowski retiring. Your thoughts kind of on Gronk as he retires? I believe he's the greatest tight end of all time. He truly revolutionized how the position was played. What are your thoughts on Rob Gronkowski?
I mean, I feel like you look at all these tight ends that are coming in the NFL today, whether it's Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, you know, just to name a few guys, and there are all these big receiving tight ends that you can line them up on the line of scrimmage or have them play in the slot. I feel like Gronk, when he came into the league in 2009, 2010, or whenever he was drafted, he was sort of like the guy who started this like revolution at the tight end position, where he was just this big massive guy that was literally a freak of nature. And it's gonna suck to see Gronk go, but I seriously believe that he is a first ballot Hall of Famer and one of the greatest tight ends in NFL history.
Yeah, absolutely. I obviously never got a chance really to see Tony Gonzalez in his prime, but I mean, I know a lot of people will say Gronk's not the greatest tight end of all time. I disagree with that argument. I think you can point to the numbers, you can point to the championships, you can point to just a ton of things, and you can point to the way Gronk fundamentally kind of changed the tight end position with how great a blocker he was, as well as being the Patriots, for all intents and purposes, the Patriots' best wide receiver of the past few years. If you look at his numbers with Tom Brady, they are insane. And if you look at Tom Brady's numbers without Gronk, they drop off quite a bit, actually. So I have a hard time seeing anyone who takes kind of the Tony Gonzalez route. I realize I'm a younger fan, a little bit naive to maybe the greatness of Gonzalez. I didn't see him a ton, but to me, Rob Gronkowski will always be the greatest tight end of all time. And one of my, as much as I dislike the Patriots, one of my favorite Patriots of all time, I share a birthday with him, actually. I don't know. I've always liked that little factoid. May 14th, me and Gronk. But yeah, I love Gronk. He was one of my favorite NFL players to watch of probably my entire lifetime watching the NFL, and I'm sad to see him go. It'll be interesting to see what he does yet. I'm sure he'll find his spot in media somewhere. He's a really interesting guy, so I'm sure he'll land on his feet. Next up, a former running back of yours, actually, Jordan Howard of the Bears, traded to the Philadelphia Eagles for a 5th and 6th round pick in the upcoming years here. What did you think of this move as far as what the Bears got back for Howard? I thought it was a little bit on the low side, and I think Howard, though he is a good player, obviously doesn't really fit the Bears' scheme anymore. What are your thoughts kind of on the Jordan Howard move?
Well, you just mentioned the fact that he just didn't fit the Bears' scheme. I mean, when you look at Howard, he came to the league in 2016 as a 5th-round pick, and took off immediately because the Bears head coach then, John Fox, was a run-heavy guy. Now, Matt Nagy's this guy who wants his running backs to be able to run between the tackles, but also be able to catch the football. But he wants there to be a balance so his running backs aren't doing one or the other. And Howard, I think, look, the writing was on the wall for Howard because back in October 2018, during the trade deadline, he was involved in rumors. Howard came out earlier this week, actually, or he came out, right, and told his agent that, look, was telling people today when he met the media that I knew I was going to end up in Philadelphia. It was just a matter of when it was going to happen. And the writing was on the wall for Howard since the Bears' season ended because they were looking at running backs. The Bears met with a few running backs at the NFL Scouting Combine, like Miles Sanders, Bryce Love. They've had guys in for visits, so it became more and more clear that the Bears just weren't going to be the future team for Jordan Howard. Howard just wasn't in their plans.
Yeah, and I think that his move to the Eagles represents something really interesting, if you will. I think that the running back position for Philadelphia is something to really look at. They have Corey Clement, obviously, still, Jordan Howard, Boston Scott, Wendell Smallwood. They definitely need to go out and focus on drafting, I believe, a more pass-ready back than they have. But Jordan Howard behind a pretty good Eagles offensive line, I think, is an interesting fit, and I'll be interesting to see how they use Howard in their scheme. I tend to think they'll draft a guy to kind of pair with him, but if Howard can be a workhorse guy, I think he can be very successful in Chicago.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
pardon me, Philadelphia.
Yeah, you know, I think one report I actually saw earlier today was that the Eagles are interested in trading for Browns running back Duke Johnson, who is not at the team for any off-season workouts, actually. So that's going to be something interesting to monitor because they could just decide to flip a mid-round pick and bring in that pass-catching running back Duke Johnson. And another thing you just mentioned was Howard's scheme fit. It's also going to be super interesting to see how he fits with the Eagles because Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson are both from the Andy Reid coaching tree. And so both these coaches, they run pretty similar offensive schemes. Obviously, there's small things that are different, but for the most part, when you look at the bigger picture, they are running schemes that are very similar to each other. And so I'm going to be really interested to see how Doug Peterson incorporates Jordan Howard into his offense in a way that Matt Nagy just didn't do so.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how Howard fits into Philadelphia as well. I think that Duke Johnson move that you propose is a really interesting one, actually. I could definitely see him kind of taking the role of that Jai role in Philadelphia. It doesn't sound like a Jai's going to sign back with the Eagles, although I guess he could have a change of heart. But I think Duke Johnson would be a really interesting fit in the Eagles' backfield as well. And I'm excited to see kind of how the rest of the Eagles' running back situation ends up, because we'll talk about them in a little bit, but I've actually really kind of liked what the Eagles have done this offseason. today, some news. CJ Anderson signing with the Detroit Lions. This move, to me, makes a lot of sense. Kerryon Johnson's kind of coming off an injury. CJ Anderson can kind of take over the LeGarrette Blount role. And I think if the Detroit has two healthy backs, they are much more interesting on offense. They proved to be pretty good. The best facet of their offense last year was when both Johnson and Blount were healthy. So if Johnson and Anderson can get together, I think that's a pretty interesting backfield combination in Detroit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, looking at the Lions, right, I just feel like one thing that's consistently plagued this team on offense since the start of the Matthew Stafford era, which is like entering its 10th or 11th season, is just the fact that they never really had a consistent presence there at running back. But I feel like with Kerryon Johnson, they've hit on it. And now with CJ Anderson, with these two guys, they will have something. Because when Anderson signed on with the Rams late last season, he really showed that, look, I still have some juice left in the tank. I can still be the type of guy you give the ball to 10 or 15 times in a game, and I can take pressure off your quarterback. So the Lions, they're searching for that consistency in the run game. And I think that with Johnson and Anderson there is a 1-2 punch, they found it.
Absolutely. Finally, Emmanuel Ogba traded to the Kansas City Chiefs. I like the move for the Chiefs, who have to replace Justin Houston, who of course signed with the Indianapolis Colts. By the way, I think that is a truly fantastic move. I know the Colts were quiet in free agency, but I think they got one of the best signings for a really cheap price. And I think the way Chris Ballard builds his teams is actually really smart. He waits for high value players to fall to him and then kind of goes at it through the draft. I really like that kind of style of team building. But Emmanuel Ogba to the Chiefs gives them a replacement pass rusher for D Ford and Justin Houston. They obviously need to add some more talent on the defense in the draft, but I think I like what this move does for the Chiefs front seven.
Yeah, you know, I think that what it does is it takes away from Kansas City having to spend that first round pick on a pass rusher in what's supposed to be a really deep edge rusher class, because when it is a deep edge rusher class, I think that there are a handful of teams that need pass rushers. And the Chiefs going out and trading for Ogba, now you can focus on finding an impact player, like someone maybe in the secondary in that first round, as opposed to having to spend it on a pass rusher. So the way I see the Chiefs handling this is impact player round one and then pass rusher in round two to be able to give someone or have Emmanuel Ogba and a rookie for at least the next couple of years there.
Absolutely. All right. Now, I like to kind of do this exercise every year where we have been talking about a lot of teams on the podcast here throughout free agency, yet some teams haven't made a lot of moves. I like to cover every team on this podcast, and over the next 2 weeks, what I'm kind of going to be doing here is going over the AFC and NFC and kind of how teams' rosters look at this point in the season, in the off season, and what they need to be doing moving forward. So let's start in the NFC, and I'll let you pick which division we start in.
So let's go ahead and start with the most questionable division, the NFC East.
All right. Which team do you want to start with?
Let's go ahead and talk about the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right. Starting the timer right now, about a minute and 30 for each of these teams. I really like what the Eagles have done in free agency. They kept Brandon Graham. They were able to keep Ronald Darby. They kept key pieces of their defense together. And I think they didn't. They are still a little bit weak at wide receiver, I would say. That is one place that kind of concerns me. But they added a running back in Jordan Howard and an offensive weapon there, of course. I like what the Eagles have done in free agency, and I think the draft, as long as they can target a few receiving targets, I think this team should end up being fine.
Yeah, I think the same thing. You know, I feel like if Carson Wentz comes back healthy, and I know that every single year we talk about the NFC East having like no clear cut winner, but if Wentz comes back healthy, I seriously think the Eagles are going to be the team that wins the NFC East crown in 2019. They have their core there, and they've added to it. Howie Roseman's a great football mind. I feel like he just doesn't get enough credit for the moves he makes. I mean, they bought back Vinnie Curry, who was with them for the Super Bowl run. And then they've got one of the deepest defensive lines. The receiving core, I think they're going to add one or two guys via the draft. But overall, the Eagles are the team to beat right now in the NFC East.
Absolutely. As we wait for the timer to run out, that was almost exactly a minute 30 seconds. There we go. There's our little timer. I doubt you can hear that on the recording. But we do have a timer go off in the background there. Up next, I'll let you pick the team, team number two, and I'll let you start.
Well, I think a team that's really interesting in the NFC East, right, would be the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, we talk about the Dallas Cowboys like having Zeke Elliott and Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett, but I've seen nothing but disappointment out of the Cowboys this offseason, because I know that Zeke and DeMarcus Lawrence and Dak Prescott as well, these three guys, they're sort of the face of the Cowboys franchise, and all three are due for extensions, but none of them have been locked up. I mean, there were rumors that Tank was going to cash in, and he hasn't gotten that big extension yet. And so it really does make me wonder, like, what is Jerry Jones doing with this Cowboys team? Because every year, it seems like the Cowboys are, according to their front office, Super Bowl contenders, but they just never seem to make the moves that really help them become actual Super Bowl contenders.
And they've lost a lot this offseason, too. Randy Gregory basically done for the year due to suspensions. David Irving also done basically due to suspensions. You lose two major pieces on the defensive side. They did add Robert Quinn. That's a great move, I think, for the Cowboys. It adds a second kind of quality pass rusher next to DeMarcus Lawrence, a guy that can help get pressure on the defensive side of the ball. I think, and I've said this on this podcast before, I think the DeMarcus Lawrence saga could end in disaster. I think that it is potentially as the alarm goes off, but we'll keep talking about the Cowboys for a second, because I think this is interesting. I think he could potentially be a holdout candidate as far as going into the season goes. I think that's going to get really ugly for the Cowboys. I'm not sure if I still have a hot take out there somewhere, but I stand by it, that I don't think DeMarcus Lawrence, there's a chance he doesn't play week one. I imagine they'd have something figured out by later in the season, but I could see that contract dispute getting really ugly, and they lose Cole Beasley as well. So they really have a lack of receiving targets as well. But the Cowboys have a ton to do in this year's draft, and they don't seem to be looking to lock up Amari Cooper either, which is a little bit surprising to me. I'm just very confused in general on kind of the way the Cowboys are refusing to almost spend money on these teams. And maybe we're overreacting. It is only April. These extensions could all come in June or July, but it just seems strange to me that none of these have come through yet.
Yeah, you know, it's just the arrow right now for the Cowboys. Like, you always want your arrow pointing up in the NFL, shows your team on the rise, but the Cowboys, their arrow's just sideways right now. Like, it's difficult to see where they're going, because, again, like you mentioned, Amari Cooper's another guy. They gave a first-round pick for him. They should extend him. I feel like good teams in the NFL always make it their number one priority to take care of their best players, and the Cowboys just haven't done that. Like, there's been no talk of an extension with DeMarcus Lawrence or any progress on it. Zero talk of an extension with Amari Cooper as well. So all of a sudden, you're looking at two of your key players that you could potentially lose after the 2019 season.
Absolutely. Moving on, I want to talk about the New York Giants, a team that I don't know where I stand on the New York Giants, because at one point, I still don't understand why they traded Odell Beckham Jr. If you were truly trying to give Eli the best roster around him possible, you would have kept Odell Beckham. And if you were truly trying to rebuild, why would you get rid of one of your best young core pieces when you could just plug in a quarterback through the draft? That move for the Giants, in my opinion, still makes absolutely no sense. But outside of that, what they have done this free agency has made a lot of sense. They've gotten rid of guys that are going to put them in cap hell. They've acquired draft picks. They've acquired stock. They look like a team that is trying to rebuild. But at the same time, they keep saying things like, we want to keep Eli Manning until 2020, which is just utterly just insanely retarded to say. Like, why would you want to keep Eli that long? The Giants are massively confusing. They've done a great job improving their offensive line. I still think they have a good offensive core, but the way they've gone about whatever they're doing, whether it's a rebuild or a reload, I just think is misguided. And I just spent a minute and 30 seconds talking about how confused I am about the New York Giants. Where are you at with the Giants right now, you said?
I mean, I'm looking at the Giants, right, and I think they're a little bit like the Cowboys in the sense that the arrow's pointing sideways, because it's like they're trying to rebuild, but they want to retool, but then they're trying to compete with what they have now, and so they're a confusing team. I feel no one's going to trust what Dave Gettleman and the Giants are doing until they figure out the biggest question on their roster right now, which far and away is going to be, who is going to be Eli Manning's successor? Is it going to be someone they draft? Is it going to be, Dwayne Haskins or Kyler Murray? Or is it going to be someone in 2020, the draft? Whoever it's going to be, that's the question that's going to really shape this Giants, like, rebuild or retooling.
Absolutely. Finally, I want to talk about the Washington Redskins, and I will start with throwing out a statement, and you can see if you agree or not. I think the Washington Redskins are currently the worst team in the NFL.
It's a lot of ways I sort of agree with that. I feel like the Giants are in certain ways like somewhat worse, because the Giants also lost Landon Collins this offseason.
I would 100% disagree with you there, and I want to talk about that for a second, actually. How on earth are the Giants a worse roster than the Washington Redskins? The Redskins have an aging running back in Adrian Peterson. They have a guy who can't stay healthy in, I forget his name, Thompson. Who's their second string? Who's their receiving back? I always forget his name.
I forgot his name as well. Unfortunately.
Luckily, we have Google. Let me pull up Washington Redskins running backs. I should know this.
Chris Thompson. That's it.
Yeah, Chris Thompson, who is good but always injury prone. And then they have no one at wide receiver. Their defensive line is not great. They added Landon Collins, sure. They are rolling out Case Keenum and Colt McCoy at quarterback. The Giants at least have Saquon Barkley. They at least have Evan Engram. They at least have Sterling Shepard. They have the core pieces of a good young offense. In my opinion, Washington has nothing to build around. Like, how can you say that the Giants have a worse roster than the Washington Redskins?
I mean, I say that because, like, you look at some of the young talent that they've got in Washington. They've got Darius Geis there, who I feel like was going to be the starter last year, had he not gone down with his torn ACL. And then you look at, they do have some solid defensive line play in Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne. They're basically building like an Alabama defense in Washington, which I feel the defensive line last year in Washington was solid. And you look at the Giants, right? And they have some aging players, some guys they've gotten rid of. But at the same time, I just don't see Pat Shurmur being the type of guy that's going to be able to develop players and help this team take the next step.
Yeah, I would agree with you on everything you said about the Redskins. I feel like this is Jay Gruden's final season there. I don't feel like they have a legitimate plan. They don't have a high enough draft pick to really go after a quarterback. I mean, I love Alex Smith, but for all intents and purposes, I am assuming Alex Smith's career is over. And he wasn't great for them even when he was healthy. The Redskins are just a team that is deeply in need of a quarterback and cannot find one. Which division should we look at next?
Let's take a look at the NFC North, a division where I feel like all the teams but one got significantly a bit better this offseason.
Let's start with the team that you feel didn't get better.
It's the Minnesota Vikings. Look, they have an $84 million quarterback. They've got their core in place. I think the biggest win for them this offseason was getting Anthony Barr back after he verbally agreed to terms with the Jets but then had to change of heart. I mean, the Vikings, we remember last year at this time they paid Kirk Cousins the $84 million because he was sort of viewed as the final piece to the Super Bowl puzzle or to the Super Bowl roster they were building, and they massively disappointed. And then this offseason they didn't get any better. And then on top of that, they lost Andrew Sandejo, a guy who was a regular starter next to Harrison Smith in the secondary. And then you had guys like Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes that were just for some reason floating. Those names were floating around in the trade rumor mill earlier in the offseason. So the Vikings, right, they do have a lot of their core in place, which is good, but they just didn't make that notable addition that you would think would get them over the top. Part of it's because they're in cap hell. But the other half of it is I just feel like Mike Zimmer is on the hot seat going into 2019.
I have always had a difficult relationship with that statement that you just made. I just don't know who you would find who would be a better head coach than Mike Zimmer. I think Mike Zimmer does the best with the talent he's provided, and I think if he went anywhere else in the NFL, he would become an instant star and just a guy that they would immediately regret letting go. But I agree that the Vikings have not done a ton to improve. Keeping Barr was a huge part, and keeping their core was good, but they didn't necessarily go out and add any free agent pieces. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Looking through kind of some past free agencies as I was studying up for this one, I noticed that, like, outside of the top five guys, free agents usually don't make a ton of an impact. It's usually guys you find in the draft who are more impactful to your team. And of course, free agency adds depth, but I'm not super concerned for the Minnesota Vikings. I think they're just as good as they were last year, and I think they are going to once again be kind of a fringe bubble team in 2019.
Yeah, you know, I think that the fringe bubble team that you just mentioned, I think that's a good start for the Vikings, because I think that's a good floor for the Vikings. The ceiling's obviously a Super Bowl championship, but I think we're going to see something different from the 2019 Vikings, because 2018, you have to keep in mind, was Kirk Cousins' first year, so hopefully things go better for them for the upcoming season.
All right. Up next, we are going to talk about your Chicago Bears, and let me start on the Bears. They obviously lost a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. Not enough to be completely worried. They still have the core of what makes them great. They still have their great cornerbacks. They still have Khalil Mack, obviously. But they lost a lot of depth in their defense, including Bryce Callahan to the Broncos and Adrian Amos to the Green Bay Packers. And on offense, they didn't add a ton. which I was a little bit surprised at. I wanted to see them go out and maybe add one more weapon for Mitch Trubisky, who I think showed promise in his last playoff game. I was down on Trubisky until really that Philadelphia Eagles game. He showed me a lot in that game, and if you have a better kicker, they're most likely on to the second round of the playoffs. I think the Bears are in a really interesting scenario right now. I think the draft kind of either sets them up to become an even better team in 2019 or sets them back because the defense, other offenses and teams in general in this division have really improved this offseason.
Well, regarding the Bears, you know, they did lose Adrian Amos and Bryce Callahan, but I was never overly concerned if those guys were going to leave because both of them were replaceable. I mean, Callahan, he's an underrated. Callahan's, I think, the best slot corner in the game, right? And he got a big W. You know, he cashed in with the Broncos. The Broncos got a great cornerback, especially because he's familiar with Vic Fangio and Ed Donatelle, who are the head coach and defensive coordinator in Denver now, who were with Chicago these last 4 years. But Callahan just hasn't been healthy, right? And so the Bears were never, like, super comfortable with his medicals. And then you look at Adrian Amos, the guy who was a fifth-round pick in 2015. He was a solid player, but he didn't really emerge till late in his third season when Eddie Jackson came along. So Eddie Jackson sort of made Adrian Amos, who was just a guy who would play in the box, mostly and be a box safety. So the Bears, you know, they on offense, they added Mike Davis, who was they bought him in primarily because of his fit. And then I think a good weapon that they added was Cordarrelle Patterson, because Matt Nagy's offense is all about, it's about speed and versatility, two of the main things there. And I feel like Patterson was sort of that weapon that they wanted to add this offseason, even though they're rumored to be in on Le'Veon Bell.
Absolutely. Moving on to the Detroit Lions. I think the Lions are a really interesting team in that they made a lot of free agency moves, though I'm not necessarily sure they got better through free agency. I know Trey Flowers is good, but you never know a guy leaving the New England system, and I get that he's familiar with Matt Patricia, but they lose Ziggy Ansah as well. I am really fascinated to see what the Detroit Lions do come draft time, because I think that's what's going to sink or swim their 2019 season. I don't think they did enough in free agency to get better, even though they made a lot of, I would say, median moves. Like, they didn't get a lot better. They kind of just added more depth.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the Lions, they paid Trey Flowers starter money, because I've got Trey Flowers stats up on my screen right here, and when Matt Patricia was the head coach, or, I'm sorry, the defensive coordinator there, Flowers had, between 2016 and 2017, he had 13.5 sacks over a two-year period. And I'm skeptical about that, because you paid this guy $90 million to you paid this guy $90 million, right? So he's making about $18 million over a five-year period to be your number one guy. That's massive expectations. Like, Flowers is the most overpaid pass rusher this free agency period.
Yeah, I mean, I would not disagree with you on that for sure. All right, now I know you're a Bears fan, so you're going to have to put on your Big J hat here and be unbiased. The Green Bay Packers, say something nice about them.
Well, I don't feel like I'm 110% biased when talking about the Packers, because I will give credit where it's due. The Packers, right, going into the offseason, my biggest thing for them was, how is this team going to address the pass rush, right? And because their pass rush has completely fallen off these last few years. Nick Perry, Clay Matthews, they were solid, but not really guys you could rely on to get after the quarterback every play. Something seriously wrong with your pass rush when your leading guy is Kyle Fackrell, No disrespect to him, by the way, but anyway, they added Za'Darius and Preston Smith, two good moves, and I feel like those are going to be the guys that for the next 5 years are the dominant pass rushers in Green Bay. And so it was awesome. It was good to see Green Bay go out and address the pass rush. One signing that I'm somewhat skeptical about is Adrian Amos, because I feel like he in Chicago was a product of the talent around him. And so it's going to be interesting to see if he can keep up this, you know, live up to the massive contract that he just got.
Yeah, I like what the Packers did on defense, but and I know that they have done a ton for Aaron Rodgers, and he has a lot of weapons, and Matt LaFleur is going to be totally different. But I still think they could have done more to go out and sign a depth wide receiver. I think they could have gone out and gotten a guy. The fact that Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham Jr. both moved this offseason and the Packers couldn't find a second complementary wide receiver to go with Devontae Adams, I think has to be a little bit disappointing. I feel like they definitely could have given up enough. They have a ton of draft capital this year because of the New Orleans trade last year. They have two first-round picks, correct?
Yes. Go ahead.
I just feel like the Packers could have done more to try to acquire a guy like John Brown, who ended up signing with the Buffalo Bills, or a Cole Beasley, or one of these, or even a Jamison Crowder, one of these smaller guys that you could have gotten on a cheap contract to kind of help improve the offense. I just feel like outside of Devontae Adams, the Packers just don't have a ton of weapons.
Well, yeah, that's 110%. It's a really valid concern, but I think what the Packers are banking on is the fact that they had three rookie wide receivers in 2018, and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Allen Lazard, right? And then they got Geronimo Allison there. So this is a team, because they lost Randall Cobb as well this offseason, they're banking on Valdez-Scantling, St. Brown, and Lazard, like, taking that next step, which it's always okay to bank on your players taking the next step. But at the same time, like, there's no guarantee that it happens. And since they do have they're picking number the first round 12th overall, the second first round pick, they're picking 30th overall. And then the second round, they've got the 44th overall selection. So you got three top 50 selections. I would like to see Green Bay add someone like N'Keal Harry or Kelvin Harmon or Riley Reid. Someone of that caliber to the roster that you can definitely look at and say, hey, that's a solid number two wide receiver we just got.
Yeah, absolutely. What division should we go after next?
Let's get the NFC South out of the way.
NFC South. I want to start with a team that's been really interesting to me, actually. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I like what they did in free agency. I think they added some interesting pieces, and I think the addition of Shaquille Barrett to that defensive line gives them a really interesting shot at what they are going to do defensively. I think adding keeping DeSean Jackson is obviously a huge thing for them, which I believe they did, correct? They ended up keeping DeSean Jackson, correct?
No, they actually traded their 2027 round pick and DeSean Jackson to Philly in exchange for Philly's 6th-round selection in 2019. So, yeah, the Bucs, right, they've done some good things this offseason, but haven't exactly been 110% perfect.
Yeah, I know. I'm just really excited about this Bucs team for some reason. Like, everyone told me to buy in on them last year, and I said no. But this year, I don't know. Something about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers gets me a little bit excited, and I'm excited to see what Bruce Arians does with that offense and how he attacks the draft, and I hope they go get some more wide receivers. I think pairing another guy with Mike Evans would make a really fun offense to watch. I don't think their defense is terrible. I think it's actually great. I don't know. I think the Buccaneers don't get enough credit, and I would say right now they are the second best team in the division. I'll say it flat out. I don't think Atlanta did enough in the offseason to keep that title, in my opinion. I think that Tampa Bay is the second best team in this division, and I'm excited to see what they do kind of in the draft. Speaking of which, let's talk about Atlanta for a second. I don't like at all what they did in free agency, because they did nothing but lose players, and for about after the first 6 weeks of the season, their offense really struggled.
Yeah, the Falcons, they, I think 2018, they were like 1-4 and something before being at the 4-4, and then they, you know, they're going in their fifth year under head coach Dan Quinn. And I seriously believe this is a major break year for Quinn, because he's gotten his team to the Super Bowl. They got there a couple of years ago, but then just absolutely, like, choked. I don't think that we need to refresh or give anyone a refresher on what happened in Super Bowl 51. But they lost Tevin Coleman in free agency, and I don't think that that was, you know, there. But they are confident Ito Smith, a guy who was a rookie last year. And they just haven't done enough to stay, to keep on pace with, like, the Saints or the Buccaneers, or even the Panthers in certain cases.
Yeah, at the same time, I'll take the opposite side of what I said as well. They lost a ton to injuries last year, and at the beginning of last year, I thought this team was a Super Bowl roster. And outside of Tevin Coleman, they didn't really lose anyone. So they could still end up being quite good. I'm just interested to see kind of how they build through the draft as well, just because it seems like they haven't done enough in free agency.
Yeah. I mean, I look at some of the talent that they've drafted over the last few years. Like, one guy that I really like that they drafted in 2018 was Isaiah Oliver, Calvin Ridley. Those are two guys with their first and second round selections. I feel like those were two guys that really did play a major role for the Falcons last year. And it is going to be interesting as they go forward to see both of them become regular starters on the Falcons. So the Falcons, you're right, they do have that Super Bowl team, that Super Bowl core there, but they just need to stay healthy, because, like, they lost Keanu Neal in the first game of the season in 2018. So this 2018 season for them wasn't about falling off completely. It was just no one was really healthy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair point. I just wonder if they... I worry they didn't do enough. A team I know didn't do a lot in free agency as the Carolina Panthers, who I think set themselves up to build through the draft, but they basically jettisoned their entire defense. So yeah, there's that, I guess. That's really all I have to say on the Panthers. They didn't do a ton to get better on offense, and they got rid of their aging defensive core, which, good for them, smart move, but now you really have to draft well.
Right, because I'm looking at the Panthers' draft selections right now, and their first two selections are number 16, number 47. They need to add impact players with both of those, because if you look at their roster right now, and I know defense is a big key for this team, is they have Luke Kuechly, he's still there. They have Kawan Short. They added Bruce Irvin this offseason, who I think was their biggest free agent signing. But they don't have that, like, number two. And they lost Thomas Davis. They lost Thomas Davis, right, who was sort of that, like, Robin to Luke Kuechly was Batman.
To be fair, Thomas Davis was bad in stretches of last year. Like, putridly bad. Very slow and not a good linebacker through much of last season. I actually really liked the fact that they cut him.
Well, I was saying, like, before 2018, right, Thomas Davis was, like, a core on that defense is sort of what I was alluding to. But, yeah, going back to the Panthers, right, they need to seriously add more pieces to their defense. And then on offense, right, like, they have DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel. They've got Torrey Smith. But then some of these names I'm looking at wide receiver, and I'm like, you know, that third round, I think Carolina needs to add another pass catcher because Greg Olsen hasn't been healthy. You can bank on, like I said earlier in the show, you can bank on someone like DJ Moore being better, but the more you have at the position, the merrier.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, up next, obviously, the, as I brain freeze, the New Orleans Saints lose Mark Ingram, keep most of their core. I don't hate what the Saints did this offseason. They kept around their good players. I think they're fine still.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all know the fact that Sean Payton is probably the best play caller in the NFL. And Drew Brees, Sean Payton, they're the best quarterback head coach duo in a lot of ways, better than Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, right? But the thing is, the Saints, the loss of Mark Ingram doesn't hurt them at all because they are going to figure out a way. They signed Latavius Murray to replace Ingram. They're going to figure out a way to make it seem like Mark Ingram never even existed.
Yeah, I would pretty much 100% agree with you on that. Finally, the NFC West, and I'll let you choose who you want to start with.
So let's talk about the team that just lost the Super Bowl, the Los Angeles Rams. And, you know, I look at the Rams, right, and they brought Dante Fowler back, Aaron Donald's there, obviously. Then they've got the Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters. They added Eric Weddle, so this is a team. But then they lost Ndamukong Suh. But even them losing Ndamukong Suh doesn't matter because I felt like Donald and Fowler last year, and then they had Michael Brockers as well. Donald and Fowler last year were phenomenal. They added Clay Matthews as well. So the Rams, they got better on defense this year. So losing, because they're not going to bring back Ndamukong Suh, losing Ndamukong Suh isn't going to break this defense. I think it actually is a good move because now they can allow some of their younger guys or even a draft pick to sort of step up and take Suh's spot in the defense that they run.
Yeah, absolutely. I would basically agree with everything you just said on the Los Angeles Rams. They could have done maybe a little bit more to add some depth at wide receiver after Cooper Kupp went down last year. That the offense was just not the same, and you don't know if he's going to be the same coming off a really serious knee injury. But I just feel like the Los Angeles Rams, they'll be fine. I wasn't entirely impressed by what they did this offseason, but I think they did just enough. A team I think did improve quite a bit is the Arizona Cardinals. And I'll be honest, adding I'm forgetting it, spacing on his name. The middle linebacker they added.
Jordan Hicks,
absolutely. Adding Jordan Hicks and Terrell Suggs, I think, really improves this defense and allows them to go in the direction of Kyler Murray if they want to with the first overall pick. They have kind of decent pass rushers there now. And people forget, I know a lot of, I get that Nick Bosa is like this consensus Hall of Famer or whatever, but Chandler Jones has put up 15 sack seasons consistently for the past 3 years for the Cardinals. Like, They are fine at pass rusher. They don't need another pass rusher. They need a defensive lineman. They got chewed up in the running game last year. They didn't really have a problem getting to the passer. They were actually, I believe, sixth in the NFL in sacks. So I think that's good. And then, of course, they add a right tackle from the Steelers. Like, that's an excellent move for a offensive line that was bad. I like what the Cardinals have done in free agency, and I'm interested to see how their draft plays out.
Yeah, you know, you touched on Nick Bosa, actually, and I think that I just feel like this is what happens, right? Because every time there's a player that's above the rest or above the competition in the draft class, everyone goes and just pegs that guy as the number one overall pick. I know there was a case with Myles Garrett a few years back. It was the case with Saquon Barkley in 2018, where before the draft, it was like, hey, these two guys, they're going to be first-year lots for number one picks. It's the same thing with Nick Bosa this year. I know I've been a guy that said, yeah, you know what, maybe Nick Bosa should go number one overall, and I do believe he's going to be the next big thing at pass rusher, but I don't think at this point, like, I've changed my opinion a bit. He doesn't have to go number one overall to be a good pass rusher. He can go number two or three. That's fine, but he's still going to be good. I think, like you mentioned, the Cardinals, you're right. They got eaten up in the run game last year, so I would look to them to probably add someone like Quinnen Williams, who's the next coming to Aaron Donald, if they're not going to go Kyler Murray.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Williams makes a lot more sense defensively as far as someone they would draft out other than Nick Bosa. But I certainly think it sounds like they're going to draft Kyler Murray.
You know, I think when you look at the Cardinals, right, and what to do with that number one overall pick, is everyone's sort of divided in the middle, because you have the Nick Bosa guys, right, that are like, oh, go best player available. But then you've got other people who are like, no, let's draft based on what we need. And so the Cardinals, everyone's divided with the number one pick. So I feel like they are going to surprise us on draft night.
Yeah, absolutely. The San Francisco 49ers, adding Kiki Kuti helps their defense, but they didn't do enough to surround Jimmy G with talent at wide receiver, which is still a major roster hole for them.
The 49ers, did they add Kiki Kuti this offseason? You mean Tevin Coleman, right?
And Kiki Kuti.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, sorry about that. That was probably something that I missed out on. But yeah, the 49ers, right? I feel like the key for them in 2019 is going to be getting a healthy Jimmy Garoppolo back, right? But I look at some of the moves that they made on offense. They bought back, they got Tevin Coleman, who's familiar with Kyle Shanahan, added D Ford to a defensive line that really needs pass rush, and then they added Quan Alexander. So they made some good moves, but they still need to add one or two more bodies to the wide receiver position to have a true aerial attack.
Absolutely. And then finally, the Seattle Seahawks. I think it was key they kept KJ Wright. I honestly don't think free agency, outside of Earl Thomas, they knew he was going to leave. Free agency didn't hurt this team that much, and I like what the Seattle Seahawks were able to do, keeping their big core guy in KJ Wright. And that's really all I have to say on the Seahawks. I think they'll be right about where they were last year, this year as well.
Yeah, you know, you look at the Seahawks last year at this time, they had, I think, everyone thinking, well, this is going to be a team that's going to have a top 10 draft pick in 2019. Let's just admit it, we're all wrong. They surpassed expectations massively. They still got Russell Wilson there. Then their offensive core, you look at Doug Baldwin, solid. Tyler Lockett, excellent number two option. Then Chris Carson, Rashad Penny are great running backs. Hoping that Will Disley comes back fully healthy. I think the Seahawks, they're going to add a safety in the NFL draft, because this is a great NFL draft to add a safety like Amani Hooker or Darnell Savage on day two. So in round two or three, I believe that they find their successor to Earl Thomas. And then probably just adding Frank Clark, their defensive, or they got the pass rusher flank Frank Clark, right? He's a excellent player. I feel like they're probably going to add someone to replace Michael Bennett, who they traded away last year, in a deep defensive line class coming up.
Absolutely. All righty. Well, you said that was the NFC. Thank you very much for joining us for this episode, man.
Yeah, thank you, as always, for having me on. Well, to be on here, you know, and I know that you're settling into your new job, but got the draft coming up in a couple weeks, so if you want me on again, let me know, and I will make time for you, man.
Absolutely. I'd love to have you on, talk a little bit about draft prospects as well, as I know that's something you're very passionate about. We will be back next week with another guest to talk about kind of the AFC teams. Thank you guys for bearing with us through our brief two-week hiatus. We are back here in April, and we will see you guys sometime end of next week. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.